Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for September 24th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast catchers and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box as a sponsor of podcasting. Set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, returning from assignment, Case Lowe. And Case, how are you doing today, man?
I'm sure you could tell from us talking off the air right now, I'm really scatterbrained, but I'm doing okay. We have a chance, Mike, as we record this podcast tonight, to be a part of history. Do you know what that history is?
Oh, the Chicago White Sox are about to break the 1962 Mets all-time worst record.
So that is exactly correct. The Sox right now, as we speak, and this will change by the time everybody hears this, hopefully they lose tonight, they have currently lost 120 games. The modern-day record that the MLB recognizes is, of course, the 1962 Mets, the expansion year franchise. They
meet
also lost.
The Mets.
Yes, beat the Mets, beat the Mets. They lost 120 games that year. The last time, and this is the stat that I've been leading with today, the last time there was a baseball team that lost more than 120 games was the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. And the interesting part about that is president of the United States at the time was William McKinley. William McKinley served in the Civil War. That is how long it's been since a baseball team has lost more than 120 games. Now, the Cleveland Spiders lost 134. The Sox, just because there's not enough time in the season, they won't lose that many. But they could be the first team since the 1800s to lose more than 120 baseball games in a season. Hopefully that happens during this show.
Yeah, it makes Daiki Yanagiuchi's losing streak feel, you know, a little ephemeral.
Not too bad. Not too bad, right? You know, it's been a tough year and a half for him, but, you know, matches are few and far between. He's not on the road every day.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there, but I mean, when they went to the Guardians, I was really hoping that they were going to go Spiders. Like, there was the part of me that was like, it's laying right there.
God, yeah. No, that was right for the taking. I'm so disappointed they didn't do that.
But yeah, no, I actually went to the Rangers home finale this weekend. And that was interesting because it was the first time that at least that attendance-wise, it was the most attendance in Arlington between the Cowboys game as well as a home finale. They said it was about 130,000 people because they were giving away more of these dopey replica rings because it was the end of the year and they were emptying it out. So kids were getting there at like 11 a.m. walking around with six Corey Seager replica rings. And I turned to my fiance and I'm like, don't they know like you're not going to get a lot of money off of those? And then I looked and basically the only way that people were making money off of these dopey replica rings, in case you've seen the Texas Rangers 2023 World Series ring, right? It
yes.
is awful, but it, the only way they're doing this is when they like sell like the complete set. So people have been like all connected to it and it's like for $700 on eBay that like they go 4 hours early to about 12 games. So you're basically have a committed to just absolutely forsaking your day 12 times to do this. And it the replica market just astounds me in a way.
Yeah, I in on one hand want to say I respect the hustle, but that seems excessive even for me. That's a lot of work for the very little possibility of a good payoff there.
Yeah, and I just in a way, like I have a bunch of Rangers bobbleheads. Like like Chris Samsa, I do kind of collect things in that kind of way, but like I can't imagine going and be like, all right, I'm someone who's going to go to each and every single one of these giveaways and make sure I have like extra tickets to bring my kids just so I can like pawn these for like on eBay for like $20 to $40 a piece.
Bobbleheads are good. You know, the White Sox, and it's like the hack joke to make here is that the White Sox have such good pregame giveaways in order to fill the ballpark, which is kind of true.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, that's part of when you have to fill a ballpark 81 times a year.
Yes, exactly. And the White Sox have pretty good ones, but I'm into bobbleheads. Last year, the Sox had a crew neck that was the 30th anniversary of them winning the AL Central, I guess maybe AL East in 1993. And that was like, that was a piece of merchandise that I would buy. The sponsor on it was very small. The design on it was great. I still see a ton of people in the city walking around with that one. That was like a big deal when that one happened. But otherwise, and maybe this is elitist of me, it probably is, I don't need a White Sox jersey that says Meyer on it. I don't need the foam finger. I don't need the Xfinity baseball glove. Unless it's a bobblehead or it is something really, really strong where I can look past a giant sponsor on it, I'm good on all of that stuff. I don't need the Hispanic Night, Mexican Heritage White Sox baseball jersey.
The Rangers do so many of those.
Oh, like, God, yeah.
For all the colleges.
Up there. Yep.
For all the local colleges, like there's a TCU night, there's an SMU night, there's a UNT night, there's a Texas Tech night, there is a Tarleton State night. I'm trying to think of the most obscure EA College Football 25 team from the state of Texas that has one. CFNF Austin does have one. You can get a Lumberjacks wow. Rangers jersey. Like they do so many of those things, like on top of everything. Sorry.
No. And I feel like, yeah. I feel like here, because we've got the two teams, and this is sad to some degree, but the Cubs, I feel, are the ones that really lean in to those, because the Cubs can leech off of Loyola, they can leech off of U of I, they can leech off of Northwestern, but then they can also do a bunch of the surrounding Big Ten schools. So you can do University of Iowa, you can do Purdue, you can do Indiana.
Wisconsin,
you can do a Butler if you really feel like it. And that's not a Big Ten school. That's, you know, shout out Horizon League. But the Cubs basically have all of the white collar giveaways and the White Sox, and rightfully so, because they clean up there. There's a lot of Mexican Heritage Night giveaways at Guaranteed Rate Field.
But like, out of all the giveaways, it's always like the cultural heritage nights that have that look the best. Like,
oh, God,
I don't,
yeah.
I have no need to ever have a Baylor University themed Texas Rangers City Connect hat. It is that is the thing that if it goes up on eBay, there's going to be some hipster that probably goes like, that's rad, you know, but there's no
sounds
need
rad.
You know, what is the one giveaway that I finally got to partake of it this year? And I believe in it strongly. The refrigerator magnet schedule.
Okay.
Opening day, you get this giant one. It has like one little sponsorship on it, but it has the entire year schedule. You slap it to your fridge. It's a great giveaway.
Yeah, that's something you can use. That's good. That's not going in the trash can. I like that.
Yeah. And for a type A person, it's like right up my alley, because I'm just like, oh, great. There I know if I'm not doing anything at night, like where am I going to go try to find like the offbeat stream so I could watch a Rangers game, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, baseball season is almost coming to an end. Your team disappointed this year. My team was historically bad. We're almost done with baseball talk. And, you know, I'm sure after that, we'll find another obscure sport to start our episodes with. Maybe you become a big NBA guy this year. I doubt it, but it'd be fun.
I mean, there's a lot of hype around Dallas-Fort Worth about Derek Lively.
A lot of Derek Lively talk. Got it. Good to know.
There is the vibe of like, okay, he's going to have a big sophomore year.
I like that Mavs team. I can't cheer for any team with Kyrie on it still. That's still
Yeah, that's a rough one for everything.
And Luka's not likable, but Luka is so good that I'm like, all right, well, you know, I like when he just decides to not pass it and score 50 points. I'm into it. But yeah, the Mavs are a tough team. I already have a bet on DraftKings. I have my Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be your 2025 NBA champions bet down. I, of course, am loyal to my Pacers, but I've been right about the Thunder for the last like 5 years, going back to the season where they traded for Chris Paul and everybody thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. And they floated with being a playoff team that year. Since his 1 year on the Clippers, have been very, very high on their point guard, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I've just been right all along. And I think this year, I not only think the Thunder are going to win, I think they're going to dominate the NBA for most of the year. And I couldn't be happier for those guys.
I've been reading a German reporter's biography of Dirk lately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's just interesting because it's someone who talks about like Wurzburg and Holger and stuff like that. And I find Holger like the most fascinating person in sports.
Dirk seems to be living a good retired life. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, no. He is vibing right now and he has like a lot of projects around town. And then with the whole TV kind of Dallas-Fort Worth being like the future of sports media rights areas, he's kind of getting a little bit, it seems like he's getting a little bit involved with that too. Like he's done some stuff for Victory Plus, I feel like.
I'm into it. Mike, I got to be honest. We were talking off the air. I was so busy last week. I did not listen to your Gate of Origin audio yet. I will be doing that, I think, as soon as we're done here. But I don't know what you thought of this show. I know I have some fleeting thoughts on this show. I don't know if we want to dive headfirst into that now. I kind of took over from you there for a second. you tell me where you want to go and I will be there. But I am ready for the first time in 2 weeks to talk some Dragon Gate.
Yeah, let's talk about Gate of Origin. So last week I did a bit of a solo show giving my thoughts about it. But I'm interested on your thoughts. I talked a bit on the show about where kind of Gate of Origin has kind of slotted itself in the schedule and how this show, I feel like, is in a lot of ways now kind of searching for an identity. But I came away from Gate of Origin thoroughly enjoying it and having, the Brave Gate match I thought was on form. And then, I mean, Johnny versus Rita was perfect in every way. And it for me, I thought it was a solid B-tier show. What were your big thoughts, though?
Good show, great main event. I think everything on this card that you would go and look at on paper and go like, oh yeah, I think that'll be good. I think it was, you know, Fuda, and I'll use the term weekend here. I do apologize, but I watched these two shows today, both Gate of Origin and Osaka. I know they were on different weekends, but I'll probably end up saying weekend a bunch. You know, Fuda had an interesting set of shows because they just kicked the shit out of him. Both at Gate of Origin and then again in Osaka. It was a good showing. You know, I remain incredibly bullish on the guy. It's a little jarring to think of, you know, Ishin as being somebody who debuted just slightly before him. Somebody who I think if you would have asked me directly after Fuda's debut or even 3 to 6 months after Fuda's debut, who would be the first guy to have a Dreamgate match of those two, I would have said Ryu Fuda, no question. And obviously that hasn't been the case. So to see Ishin dominate him the way they did was super interesting. To see Valletta versus Rita, I have a lot of Valletta thoughts on this episode. I thought that match was really interesting. Zebratz versus Matt Blanky was a perfect match for what it was. I do apologize to everybody. I have more copious amounts of praise to throw Shun Skywalker's way on this episode. He did a number of things over these two shows that really, really impressed me. I think Natural Vibe, Shimizu, Strong Machine, JUT, I think that is really catapulting up the ranks of the great Triangle Gate teams of all time just because of the amount of defenses they've had and the amount of time they have held those titles now. And Daya versus Kame was not only great, but it was useful because for the first quarter of the year, it was all Kame all the time. He was the main character. He was the most pushed guy. It seemed like he was the most over guy. And he hasn't had the most impactful or high profile June, July, August, September. And so to get him in this match and to be reminded what he can do in a high profile setting and in a high profile singles match setting, which I think is really, really relevant given who his teammates are and Hyo and Monte, two guys who have cut their teeth as being great tag partners, being great in trios matches, but sometimes leave a little bit more to be desired in a singles capacity. Kame comes in once again and you go, oh, that's right. He's one of the best wrestlers in the world. He, from an output standpoint, has had one of the best 2024s in all of wrestling, certainly in all of Dragon Gate. So yeah, you know, there was some undercard stuff here that, you know, I would say wasn't great, but it didn't need to be great. The stuff that mattered on this show I thought was very good, and I went notebook on the main event.
Yeah, that was the only four I had on the show. I mean, Rita and Johnny, that is my classic five stars, perfect, no notes kind of match, mm-hmm. in a way that just paid off what you want to, especially the way that Rita kind of worked as like a territory jobber. That was really on point. But yeah, I thought it was a fascinating Brave Gate match. Now, I think that like seeing like the appeals of making this Takedo Kame versus Jackie Kame and then having a lot more of a grapple opening, I thought was a fascinating twist. And especially for like two guys who are kind of adrift without like generational rivals really at this point, they showed a chemistry that this is not like a Darkness Dragon Dragon Kid kind of rivalry, but could you say that this could eventually be like a Kanes and Yoshino style Brave Gate rivalry? It kind of had a little bit of beat, a couple beats of that I really enjoyed.
You would certainly hope so. I mean, you know, I think at some point here, we'll get a heel version of Kame, and then I think this match would be even better. You know, it's one of the perils that I think the Brave Gate belt has fallen into is the heels that have held it. You know, it was Ishin right before Ishin figured himself out. It was Hyo at a time where Hyo wasn't producing great matches, you know, but then when a babyface holds the belt, it's like you're missing the dominant heels to go against by and large, you know, with Jason and Ishin now, especially, you know, weighing too much to be in these Brave Gate matches. So Daya and Kame had a hurdle to overcome just in the sense that it was two beloved baby faces, and Daya has a lot of momentum and Kame is incredibly popular. And I thought they worked a match where they got the most out of what they could do given the current character alignments. And the thing about Kame that I think is so great and that really, you know, always excites me when he's in a spot like this is he can really wrestle a violent singles match. And I mean that in a really complimentary way. Obviously, he's not doing box attack and, you know, powder attacks and stuff like that. Nobody's going through a table in a Jackie Kame match. But man, towards the end of this, you forget how hard this guy can hit and how he can dunk people on his head. And it feels very akin, and it makes sense given that he has the Torbellino. He does have a little bit of Yoshino in him, where a Kame match can be very good, very good, very good. And then you snap your fingers and he ramps up the intensity to a level and you go, holy shit, I'm watching a great match. And that was a little bit of what this was, where I it never waned an interest for me. I thought it was interesting the entire time. But then, my God, that finishing stretch, it got good. It got really, really good. And it ended up with, a four-star match and good for Daya. You know, I think this is the Brave Gate run that he needed. The only real critique you have over Daya right now is you have this really interesting Dream Gate champion and these really interesting Twin Gate champions and these dominant Triangle Gate champions. And I think by proxy, Daya has fallen to fourth in the champion power rankings. But again, all of their champions are great right now. There are times in this company in the much recent past where if Daya was having this output with a different set of champions, we'd be going, man, Daya's really saving the company with this Brave Gate run. You know, thank God he's there to close out this show. It just so happens, and this has been, you know, something we talked about leaving Kobe World, and I think a lot of people have picked up this talking point since, is, hey, the champions right now are great. You know, this is the best set of champions Dragon Gate has had in a really long time.
Yeah, and I think Daya, in a way, kind of ends up being the mascot kind of character for the promotion right now. And in that fashion, he doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to go out there and have the absolute belters. And then when you have, I mean, you bring up like when we count on the Brave Gate, I mean, we're talking 2019, Ishida and Okuda, when the rest of the champions were, you know, in and out of quality and also interesting programs. It is something where with Daya, it's the overwhelming kind of thing that I think now that we're coming up to a year that's very apparent. And you did get to see over these two shows, especially, I thought you got a little bit more of it in Osaka with Kakuta. Decourage, like we talk about how the best thing for Ryoya Tanaka was the fact that Yuki Yoshioka has been gone for now 10 months. But for Kakuta and Daya, there's a looming presence for the two of them that, like, 10 months into this injury, like, D-Courage is such an interesting unit because you have two completely different things happening amongst the three members right now. I feel like where Tanaka is using this to kind of power up, and we get to talk, and we'll talk about the real fun Prime Zone Plus match later on. But you do kind of, at least for me, like, there's a looming presence of Yoshioka, and especially like when you like catch glimpses of him at like backstage and stuff, that I feel like is kind of, in a way, for Daya, also kind of suppresses him, if that makes sense.
I understand that. And I think that's something that he'll have to balance throughout his entire career. You know, I think they did such a good job with D-Courage in 2022 that when Yoshioka comes back, there's always going to be the connective tissue of what's Daya doing in contrast to what Yoshioka's doing. I know I've been saying this for now 2.5 years where I go, oh man, I wish they turned Yoshioka heel. But when he comes back, I really think it would be better for everybody. And I know Zebrats is only expanding and expanding, but I think it would be better for everybody if they did the D-Courage comeback match. It's a 4-on-4 tag. And then at the end of it, Yoshioka turns heel. And then you can blow up D-Courage and rip the Band-Aid off and have these guys do something else, because there is, and I think they've had a successful year. You know, Daya has had this career stabilizing Brave Gate run, and I think you're exactly right. He has become like this company cheerleader, where he has the match with Hyo at World, which was the right match to do. It was not a great match, but it was good enough, and he came out on top. It was the right result. He had that really interesting match with Junta at Dangerous Gate, you know, the outside invader coming in and Daya doing his job, and then he headlines this show here, you know, this B-tier show against Kame, and it's a great match. And so he's doing his job. Kakuta has had some ups and downs, but that Dreamgate match with Yamada was so great that, you know, I think he's in a safe position for now. And Tanaka continues to churn out great matches. You know, again, when I compile SFM50 at the end of this year, I don't think I'm going to vote for Kakuta. Daya feels like a bubble guy at best, but I know Ryoya Tanaka is going to be on my list. I just wish, for the sake of everybody, that in 2025, assuming, you know, let's say Yoshioka's out exactly 1 year and he comes back at Final Gate, I hope in 2025 we're not doing more D-Courage. I think Yoshioka coming back would actually present everybody with a chance to blow it up and go their own separate way.
And especially at a time that you have such a overwhelmingly strong storyline going of Zebrats and Gold Class doing a little bit of a swerve, saying like, oh yeah, and guess what? D-Courage is gone.
Yeah,
I think that in a way that if when we start doing like our bold, big predictions, they more often or not kind of turn out to be sometimes a swing and a miss. That seems like something that, as we looked into 2025, is a real open thing. Because then you're looking at 3 years of D-Courage at that point.
If 3 years of D-Courage when, and I don't even think this is, you know, their fault by any means, but for a year now, Big Hug has out D-Courage. They've become the come to the small town and see this babyface group unit. And again, that happens. You know, every unit gets usurped by somebody else, but we're really dealing with like Diet D-Courage right now. And I don't want to see that exist with Yoshioka, because I think we're all going to be in, assuming that he can come back and be the wrestler that he once was. I mean, he's been out for almost a year now, and a year is a really long time. And I don't know, man, I think Yoshioka could hit the ground running and be really, really interesting, because there's a good chance, unless you are one of the anti-Yoshioka people out there, and I know they're out there, but if you have any spot in your heart for him, I think he's going to come back and be yet another jolt to a promotion that, despite, let's put it as it is, dodgy attendance in Osaka, a promotion that still feels quite hot right now.
Yeah, that's right. And let's, I guess, use this as a way to kind of move into talk about the show this week. It was, did you know that this is the last Edeon Arena 2 show that they have this year?
Yeah, that makes sense. They don't run it.
Yep.
Post Gate of Destiny. Yeah,
that's right. And Gate of Destiny, they aren't running it in October. So after Gate of Destiny, there's no more shows in Osaka. A couple big things I kind of wanted to touch on with this, using the Osaka number two, and then also a bit of today's Prime Zone Plus show from Kobe Lapis Hall. And we kind of what I wanted to get your stock in, because uniquely, you got a chance to see him also on this Gate of Origin show as well. Hamare, we are now a full loop into Hamare's Kato's career, and we've seen, like, from his big turn in Tokyo Korakuen Hall through, like, the almost all of the stops that Dragon Gate makes along the way. And I just kind of wanted to start off at least talking about Osaka, about where are you at with Hamare after his heel turn and getting to see him now? I guess really your first chance to see him as Z-Brat's Hamare.
He's really good. I think that's the simple way to put it. And I thought a lot about Hamare 2 weeks ago. You know, I did this show and we talked about a bunch about it. And then Joe Lanza invited me on the flagship to talk about Dragon Gate. And I enjoyed doing that because Joe, I think has dug his heels in a little bit on modern day Dragon Gate. And it was a very fun segment, almost arguing with him over, like, Joe, you should like this. I know your taste. This is the kind of wrestling you like. You're just not accepting it for whatever reason. And it was nice to see Hamare, become a story in wrestling, even on a micro level. It's like I said in my email to Dave, and I sent him the write up for the Corkin show. I go, I know you have bigger things going on. I know that American wrestling promotions are vying for new television contracts right now. I get it, but there is this story in Japan that's really cool. I'm so stunned and so intrigued and quite honestly excited over what they've done with Hamare, because I just kind of assumed that they would do the turn at Korakuen and maybe he would do Origin and maybe he would do Osaka, but I kind of thought they would keep him on ice until the next Korakuen and that maybe he would be Kobe and Tokyo, maybe until Gate of Destiny, and then they would slowly ease him in. But after Korakuen, he was just on every show. He's done, I think, all of the house shows. He was on the two televised shows. He's obviously on the Kobe show next week. And that in itself is very exciting, that they just ripped the training wheels off of this guy's bike and said, you are now a touring roster member. There are guys that debuted 3 years before you that are not on every show. You are going to be on every show going forward. Go knock yourself out. And I thought he had two really good showings. I guess we got to go back to Origin for just a second, because I thought the Z-Brat's Mad Blanky match was very close to being a notebook match. I thought it was perfect for what it was. Shun Skywalker was the star of that match. He was the star in everything that he touched over these two shows. But I mean, credit to Hamare. He's wrestling a little bit like a baby giraffe, which is what you would expect. And I would not be shocked if it was at least somewhat intentional that he does not come across as fluid and as trained as the people that have been wrestling 150 matches a year for over a decade now. But I watched him in, a high profile match at Gate of Origin, and then, what we'll just call simply a fast paced match in Osaka, and he doesn't look out of place. It's really quite exciting to see somebody so new, so fresh, do these things and find himself in the midst of a pretty engaging storyline between the Z-Brats and a Gold Class.
Yeah, and it really kind of struck at me during the Prime Zone Plus match. He has a match against Ryoya Tanaka where it you get to see with some of these rookies, and I think with Dragon Gate uniquely, because there is it's very much a push you out of the nest kind of company. Like we've seen people get elevated immediately, and we see Rhea Fuda scrapping to be relevant on his homomkring show.
Well, it's Ryoya Tanaka. They pushed him out of the nest and he flew. And so now you look at where he's at. It's not a mistake.
No, it's not a mistake. And it's interesting to kind of contrast it, because Ryoya, like we've been lauding this guy for especially the last 6 months as someone who has become one of the most nails babyfaces in all of wrestling. And it's just every little thing that you would want from a babyface junior heavyweight, he does. And you get someone like Kamari across these shows. And I love the baby drafting. You know what the vibe is a little bit to me that is something that that I'm trying to put behind me because I think that he's so much better than that. He has like rookie Daichi Hashimoto energy at times, you know, like as a vibe, but more, much more like fearsome. But like there's an aloofness to him that I really think that charisma wise, like whereas Ryoya just does all the babyface things you want kind of a just little punk ass out of him. You want like exactly to be this kind of character that he is. And those are the things that I think within the promotion that that you have people who are 2 or 3 or 4 year seniors of him still kind of struggle to grasp character at times. And this guy within his first loop is like, oh, I know how to be a prick and I'm good at it. And that was one of the things like that really kind of surprised me about the Prime Zone match is like, oh, this guy has main event Rudo energy and it's going to be fun to see how he develops and if he is able to reach that threshold.
And I think particularly, you know, Tanaka being the only graduate of his class, he came in without that LinkedIn partner from the jump. And I know that Homare has 3 other guys, one of which will debut over the weekend. And so your natural inclination would be, oh, well, I guess those are going to be his generational peers and we'll compare Homare to the other 3 guys forever and so on. But I think Tanaka and him, from the very, very little bit, i.e. the one match we've seen them in, they had such natural chemistry that you go, well, okay, let's run with this a little bit. You know, let's see where these guys go and see if they can be, you know, a lofty goal. But, you know, the Shingo Hulk or the Darkness Dragon kid of a generation. Homari is so exciting because he's not doing like the Tien Revolution future ace act, which I think could have been an easy pitfall to fall into. And look, he's not a finished product by any means, but if he was doing the future ace act in the unit with Jason Lee and Shun Skywalker and even Ishin, who, you know, just has a lot of momentum right now, I think it would come across a little foolish. But he's just doing the thing, like you said, he's just like a shit kicker. You know, he's a little punk and he kind of fell into something that immediately worked. And I think if they just ride this wave of momentum, we'll see it only get better and better. So it's not only exciting to see him on the road, it's exciting to see him maybe not thrive, but do incredibly well in his first 2 big televised matches post Corkin. Because this is one of those things that, you know, if he looks out of place in Gate of Origin and then he stinks it up in Osaka, all right, now we're not excited about him. You know, now it was one good debut match and a cool angle. And, you know, we'll move on and he'll just be the bottom feeder of Z-Brats. And I think Dragon can be that cutthroat at times. You know, I think if he would have looked really bad at Gate of Origin, then he probably would have taken the fall on the Osaka show. But that's not what happened. He continues to do well. He continues to keep his head above water. So I'm very excited, you know, to have somebody this new and this fresh and to already have them be pushed is pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. And especially the way that as a heel act, like and in a manner that, you know, like, of course, like you go to how quickly they put people into RED, but there was still a little bit of getting sea legs there. I think it's the charisma. He understands it. And that makes it really kind of fun to see. But as we look at this Osaka Edeon 2 show, I think that we kind of overall got a little bit of a revival of what they did at Korakuen, where we saw the after an intermission latter half of the show be about this Gold Class versus Z-Brats feud that will be taking on head to head on October 4th. Loser leaves the unit. And it's interesting for me, at least as we like look at this time, because we kind of we weren't thinking that it could have been a tournament time, but this felt like the open time period that if they were going to run that tournament, they could have done it here. Instead, we're getting the stable versus stable kind of war happening. And we got to see that throughout the show on Edeon 2, you had a Hamare at Ishin Kai opener versus D Courage, leading to Z-Brats doing a save and then leading off to the post intermission Rita Hulk and Junior versus Shun Jason and Kota Minora match, as well as Benkei versus Johnny Valletta. And we're seeing Dragon Gate kind of tap the same thing that they did in Corkin, where it felt like, at least for me, like that last half of the show, or at least the 2 top matches, kind of flowed together as if it was its own like 45-minute TV program.
So I'll preface this with, I've been really out of the loop on all things wrestling over the last week and a half. And so I feel like I've just forgotten a lot of things. I'm not in the mode of critically thinking about wrestling, so maybe I'm forgetting some really obvious stuff. But let's just keep within the confines of Drangate for now. Maybe we'll expand it in just a second. Are we looking at Zebrats versus Gold Class as being a viable feud of the year contender? If you factor in basically everything from the August Corican of Minoru versus Minorita at the time, everything from that match onward, so 2 months of story at this point, are we looking at this as maybe the best continued storytelling Drangate has done this year?
In a lot of ways, like it's fascinating that it just kind of worked for you that you got to do that episode, Joe, when you did. To me, that, like, is it a feud of the year? I think it's according to where your mileage is with Swerve versus Hangman. I would put, we still probably have at least two more big matches, I feel like, in Zebrats versus versus Gold Class case. Don't you kind of feel like that this loser expulsion match is not going to be it? Like, there's going to be one more kind of thing. And if it plays out at the level that it's played out, at least we've seen, like, since August, I think it deserves merit. It's in the conversation. I can't think of very many other feuds necessarily that I'm as high on this year as this one.
Yeah, I mean, look, Swerve versus Hangman will win in a broader sense. I will probably be voting for Zach and Hechicero and their three matches, the two singles matches and the one tag in America, just because I've been so thrilled by what they've done. I just think that feud is so cool. And I understand that's probably not a popular opinion, but I like it. To me, that's a great wrestling feud. They've done exactly what I've wanted them to do. I feel very satisfied as a consumer. But you're seeing, with Zebras and Gold Class, you're not only seeing this great story where you have Rita versus Minoru, but then it offshoots into Rita versus Valletta. And then you have, you know, the continued dominance of Ben K and what he's doing. You have Junior and Shun, who are really interesting with one another. You know, you have Ishin in the mix now. You have Amari in the mix now. It also feels like things have escalated in a really satisfying way. You know, every one of their matches has been intense, but they all feel like they're building off of the last match. It's kind of, you know, we were having a lot of conversations a few years ago about, like, oh man, if there were still comp DVDs, you know, the Ishida versus Okuda comp DVD that we used to joke about, we haven't seen the payoff yet. You know, we're a long ways away, I think, from the definitive match of this series, because I would say we have two high profile matches for this feud in the next 2 weeks. The Kobe main event, I think, is a great looking match. And then you obviously have what they're doing at Corkin. So you've got two there, plus whatever the fallout of Corkin is. But it just feels like one that, if you were to watch it all in succession, you know, everything from that August Cork and to now, all the angles in between, I think you would sit back and go, man, this is a proper wrestling feud. You know, this is building in a way that's really interesting. You have so many different avenues you can go down. You have the insertion of Gianni, which I might be the one to pump the brakes on Gianni this week. Yes, I'll explain in just a second.
Okay,
I think it's a net positive, but I remain concerned at some of the things that I have seen. But all in all, you know, you just have this feud that feels really heated in the crowd. I can't get over the crowd when Rita and Minoru in the ring with one another. Like, that feels really hot. And I guess, I mean, I don't know. Does that end in hair versus hair at some point? Is that the... Well, I guess not, because Minoru already lost a hair match. That's funny. I didn't even think about that. You know, you have to do the singles match between those two at some point. And there's, I would like to see some stipulation on it. I would actually like to see those two go out there and brawl, which is not par for the course for Drangate, but I kind of think this feud calls for it. I don't know what they're going to do. I just think this surpasses the build to Dead or Alive. And it's, you know, obviously far more engaging from a storyline perspective than Yamato winning the Dreamgate belt and the stuff with Ben. You know, Doi and Dragon Kid are a nice story, but that's not a storyline per se. I think right now in Drangate, I think this would take the crown. I really, really am into all of the things they have done with Zebrats and Gold Class. And credit to Zebrats, because they are pulling their weight as a dominant heel unit. They are firing on all cylinders right now.
Isn't it great when a heel unit has more than five members?
I gotta be honest, Mike. It's pretty nice. It is pretty, pretty nice.
If there's like one booking takeaway, I feel like that Dragon Gate has proven is like you should have your heel unit have like three or four more members than the rest of all of your units. Like you need to have more of that. Let's talk about Osaka number two in specific. So you get this Gold Class versus Z-Bratz trios match. It gets thrown out. Rita technically gets the one by DQ. It turns into a complete schmoz. It's an outright brawl fest, basically. There was not a lot of in-ring action in that first trios match. Benkei makes a save as the cookie sheet comes out to a huge pop. And then right as it seems like he clears house, then the sirens start going off. You have Benkei versus Johnny Valletta, the advertised main event. And from there, you have a large brawl. Again, it basically takes 5 minutes for them to get into the ring. There is a huge scream and pop when Benkei gets him up for the Masakare. Then the closing stretch had Gold Class be able to interfere here, basically dismantling Johnny, leading to the spear for Benkei, getting the win and sending Gold Class to Kobe with some momentum. And I thought that out of Johnny's like heavyweight roster member matches, Benkei is the one he has the most chemistry with by far. And Benkei was able to play into it in a way for the Johnny context that I don't think really Luis Monte really had a chance of doing so. I know there was a Shimizu singles match that was fun, but it was not necessarily with someone where like Benkei is just like a now the ball of charisma that the crowd can get behind. And I think it lets him kind of play into the trappings that Johnny kind of excels at, that you can't do as much for a heavyweight unless you have like the crowd response. And I feel like that's what made this match kind of work for me a lot more than the other heavyweight matches that Johnny Valletta has had in Dragon Gate.
Yeah, I liked the bed match. I thought it ended very, very strong. There was a point about halfway through where I really felt like they were starting to bite off more than they could chew with Valletta as an entity. I still think the best thing you can do with him is leave people wanting more. Leave people wondering what the Ben match would look like instead of doing the Ben match. You know, you had to pay off the Rita match. I thought the Rita match was executed great. It was a real testament to how much Valletta has improved because, you know, one of my big knocks on him early was just how light he was working. And it seemed like he was afraid to have any sort of physical contact with this roster. And that was certainly not the case in the Rita match. And luckily, certainly not the case in the Ben match. I thought the Ben match was on its way to falling apart. And I thought Valletta was on his way to losing that aura. I think we're done with Valletta singles matches. We've got the Rita match. We saw him versus Ben. Keep this guy in six-man tags. Keep this guy in eight-man tags. Let him brawl. Let him do one cool, fast-paced Dragon Gate sequence that he won't mess up and protect him otherwise. They just got to the point of almost overexposing him. And then, you know, once Ben hit the missile dropkick and Valletta just took a step backwards and bounced back, I was like, all right, I'm back in. All right, they got me. Finishing stretch was great. They protected him even in a loss. I'm into it. But I don't want them to get comfortable. You know, I don't want to see Valletta versus Susumu. I don't want to see Valletta versus Kakuta now. They've done what they need to do. I'm good. Don't give me Valletta versus Hulk. Maybe if we're feeling frisky, I know they've done it on house shows before. Valletta versus Junior would be interesting. It's a junior singles match. I'd like to see it. But I think they're now at the point where any more singles matches from Valletta, and I think they are risking exposing this guy as not being as sound of a worker as the rest of the roster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think you have had a lot of high-profile singles matches from him. If you think just about his most recent Dragon Gate matches, you have a couple of the trios and Atomicos where I feel like is the best use of him. But you have, of course, the Monte match, you have the Rita match, now the Ben one. Unless it's like an outright squash of a twerpy rookie, he doesn't need to have a singles match until the next time you want to do a big heavyweight versus heavyweight match. Like, ideally, you know who the next person, if it's not going to be just a rookie squash that you have a singles match with?
Who's
should
that?
Should be Oshiki Kato. That's the next person that they should do. And that should be months away. months away.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is we're probably nearing a Kato return.
He showed up in Tajimi.
He did. I just, like, it's funny. Like, Yoshioka should come back and turn heel, but Kato should come back and stay heel. I'm not saying the whole roster needs to be on Zebrats at this point, but Kato was really figuring himself out as a heel, and I know you can make the argument that with Ishin and even with Kai and with Valletta, you don't need that much size in your heel, and you can once again kind of kick Kato to the curb and then circle back and do that whole story again at some point. I wouldn't turn him. You know, honestly, I'd be more intrigued by Valletta versus Mochi Sr. I think that's a match that I would be like, all right, I trust that. I think Valletta could look dangerous. I think it could look a lot like the Brody Lee match. And, you know, that would be something I'd be willing to check out. But even Kato, I don't know, man. I think you got to keep that guy heel.
I mean, that's why I said, like, way down the line.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it is going to be, he's going to be such like an odd person to kind of come back into because of he's kind of been supplanted now by Hamare in a lot of ways.
That's true. It raises the question. I thought going into Gate of Destiny, maybe they'll still do this, but it seemed like they were priming everybody for a Shun, Minoru, Jason Triangle Gate run at some point, you know, after World when all those guys lost their titles and Minoru was doing the new character work. And then obviously they've been so tied to Gold Class that hasn't happened. It'd be interesting if Kato came back, if they did Kato, Hamare, and Ishin as at least Triangle Gate contenders into the young wing of Zebrats. I mean, you have those possibilities now with a unit with that many guys, and yet it doesn't feel overcrowded. And I think the only roadblock you have in terms of guys stepping on each other's roles might be Kato and Valletta. But I think the aesthetic of Valletta might ease that just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Valletta is treated differently than anyone else in the company. And you're kind of at the point, though, like getting back to Valletta aura and energy. It is something where he kind of has to be figured out of any like championship challengers. Teams.
He should never have another title match.
No, like he should not even be a challenger team.
No, we did the Dreamgate match and, you know, I'm firmly of the belief, I talked with somebody about this after the match happened, I think Valletta in the ring forgot half the spots of the match. You know, I just think his mind went blank and Monte was forced to do a carry job in a position where he couldn't necessarily do the job that was required of him, but we crossed it off the list. He challenged for the Dreamgate belt. I was worried then that they would kill his aura. And then luckily they transitioned right into the Rita stuff, which was brilliant. And he got it back and he came back at Cork and it was all great. He should never be in another title match. Not a Twin Gate match, not a Triangle Gate match. This guy should be so unstable and cause so much chaos that GM Ryo Saito shouldn't risk putting him in a title match as to not disappoint the fans for the inevitable DQ. That is how they should spin it. He should be this rogue undercard wrestler where you always are left going, oh man, I wonder what would happen if he wrestled X and then you never get the match. It is just the continued wondering that I think is the appeal of Valletta more so than anything.
Yeah, they should tease Akihiro Sahara versus Johnny Valletta and that should never happen.
Yeah, very much so. God, I'm excited for that guy.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Elsewhere on this show, like you talked about you talked about seeing like, okay, Shun, Jason, and Mino as a Triangle Gate team. Yama Doi, the best Twin Gate team in history after, I mean, it matters how you really feel about CK1. Reuniting against Hyo and Jackie Kamei in an interesting go-to-intermission match, I felt like was the clear highlight of anything else on the undercard here in Osaka.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
You know, I did not like this match as much as you. The Stuffed Cat was a great barrier into me caring about the match. And, you know, by the end of it, it was almost like a mental block where about 8 minutes in, I realized they weren't doing comedy anymore. And I was like, oh, I guess I should lock in here. This is actually a pretty good match, but it certainly did not help things. I was thinking with this card, and it was a weird deal where it seemed to not draw great, but also, correct me if I'm wrong, did they flip the hard cam in Osaka? Is it normally on the other side of the venue?
No, it's always, you never get to see the entrances in Osaka number two.
Okay, it just looked odd. I don't know why the lights were on for that. I don't know what that is.
Like, if I became a billionaire, won Powerball, and decided to become a silent partner in Dragon Gate, but only issue them several proclamations, the first one is I'm paying for a light trust for you. Because it's been something that I feel like over the last, like, 6 months, when we talk about presentation, this is one of the things that the company needs to stop doing. They need to either have spots, or they need to find some way to not have overhead lights in every place they're in.
I would take floodlights at this point. Like, just stick four floodlights in the corner and call it a day. It looked so bad. And no reason looked that bad. I guess my issue with this match was it did not draw great. And I think Ben versus Valletta, very interesting match. Probably not a match that you should have headlined with. I wish, given that Monte has been so busy with the N1, and all the other things he's been doing, you know, Hyo and Kame have spent a lot of time just doing two-on-two tags lately. And I understand Kame just had the Brave Gate match. I wish they would have done Doi and Dragon Kid versus Hyo and Kame in a Twin Gate match and had it headline this show, have all the Gold Class Zebrat stuff in before it. And then it has the same pacing at that point, the same structure as that Korakuen show. And I think that would have worked out a lot nicer. I think you would have drawn more fans to the building. There was just a weird, like, this match being where it was, having the tone that it did, it, to me, weirdly felt out of place on the show. This match should have been better. I should have cared about it more. They shouldn't have done comedy. And I just felt weird about the whole thing. That's a me problem. That's a me hurdle. But watching the show start to finish and then, you know, thinking about it in my mind, I went, that might have been the wrong main event for this building. You might have wanted just something a little bit bigger. And I don't think you would have hurt anybody by doing that Twin Gate. I guess Doi and Yamato are not Twin Gate champions. Doi and Dragon Kid are, but you see my larger point.
You could have put Yamato and...
Yeah, Yamato, Kagetora, Susumu, and Ultimo is the same thing as Dragon Kid, Kagetora, yeah. Susumu, and Ultimo.
I think the other thing to consider about the show, you think about the Osaka natives on this. I mean, you did not have Tanaka on this show. You did not. You had Shimizu in a touch football match, you know, so Yoshida, also an Osaka native, or has claimed Osaka as a hometown for himself. You have him in a tag match with Toru Washi. So for a company that does like to feature hometown guys in key spots, that wasn't really applicable here this time. And I think that hurts for these kind of draws, especially the prospect of Gate of Destiny on, I think it's November 3rd. So you have like that. So in a way, it's like, oh, are you saving the big match for your Osaka natives for the big building? Or are you basically saying like, hey, we are going hot on this feud that is a great feud, but it's at the detriment of the rest of your card at this point?
It would be nice as I look through the natural vibes, Triangle Gate defenses here. It would be nice if they did Shimizu J and UT versus Daya Kakuta and Tanaka, or a returning Yoshioka in place of Daya on Gate of Destiny to get Shimizu and Tanaka in the same match.
I think that would be a good thing. And then you're also building up the idea of Tanaka going for his first championship in Osaka number two again, or Osaka Edeon Arena again.
And also just imagine Shimizu and Tanaka in a big match, what they could do with each other.
Oh God, Tanaka. Well, I miss Tanaka on this. We got La Estrella in for Tanaka, and if you look at Prime Zone, that is a guy whose arm looks like it's not feeling very good right now. I haven't heard anything about it, but serious cupping and taping up. You had La Estrella, though, team with D-Courage in the opener. It was a great use of La Estrella, but you watch him, you're like, oh, he's kind of plugging in for Tanaka, and I really wish it was Ryo Tanaka right now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of that match. You know, the other thing, we kind of glossed over the Gold Class and Zebrats match that I want to go back to.
Oh, the trios? Let's touch on it.
But just real quick on the match number two on that Osaka show, Yoshida and Owashi versus Fuji and Fuda. Owashi directly stepping on the head of Fuda was a really gross spot in a complimentary way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, they beat the shit out of Food on that match. Yoshida, too. And Yoshida is not on the pecking order of being able to do that to many guys. And man, did they beat up Fuda.
Yeah, Yoshida, if you want to talk about guys who don't work full time anymore, that's like the prime guy. I mean, it was in Osaka, so he was on here when he hasn't been on any other shows this month.
And it was noticeable. You know, he made his presence felt. Again, tough weekend for Rio Fuda. I want them to do something with him so bad.
I still see
all the talent there, but man, it is a rough go for him right now.
He got his own theme song though.
Finally. That's good. That's a plus. I mean, you know, I
3 years.
Yeah. you know, I mean, God, what a career. I don't know long term what they'll do with him. I think he's super, super talented. And same with Daiki, you know, and Daiki, I think they're doing something with him. You know, I think they're clearly telling a Cork and Hall related story. So I'm not pressing about him being on the road like I was, because I see they're doing something in that building and I get sure. it. But Fuda, I don't know what you do. Because you can't turn him heel. You know, Zebrats has a lot of guys right now. You can't turn Fuda heel. I still maintain, I think the worst thing they could do would be to put him with Mochizuki and Fuji, because everybody knows he can do that. You know, it's the same thing that Okuda can never figure out. It's about doing the Dragon Gate things and not the kicky shooty things, you know,
because his kicky things, like, although he does like the dimension work, which is the thing that kind of sets him apart, because he does misdirection, there are people on the roster who do the kicky things much better than him.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And he's still very good, but mm-hmm. there's a gap there, and I don't know what they're gonna do.
Just had a Fuda idea. He should not be allowed to join because he is not an old man, but he should be a Yamato should make him an assistant of Paradox, and he should be having to do Paradox 8-mans for the next 6 months.
I mean, it would make him a much better wrestler, you know. It's a weird adjacent thing of, I just said, you know, he shouldn't be with Mochizuki and Fuji, but him with Susumu.
He needs to be with Susumu and Kage.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you know, I can get on board with that, because it's literally just as simple as they're not kicky guys. You know, they hit hard. They're not crazy young, you know, Dragon Daya like wrestlers. But Mochizuki throws kicks and Fuda throws kicks, and you got to separate those two. And it's as simple as that.
Yep. No, absolutely. Do you have any other thoughts on the Edeon Arena 2 show?
I want to talk about Zebrats and Gold Class.
Yeah, we'll end on the trios, the absolute crazy crowd brawl match.
Shun Skywalker, man.
He's so cool.
He's so good. So let me go back to Gate of Origin real quick, and I'll kind of weave a tale of two matches here. So there's so many things we've said about Shun, so many things that can be said about Shun. It's why, you know, even, you know, as I look at my spreadsheet as we enter the final quarter of the year, you know, I've got 18 Shun Skywalker matches at 4 stars or greater, the highest of which right now is the 4.5-star Twin Gate match from Kobe World. You know, he's in the range of a Brian Danielson, he's in the range of a Will Ospreay, he's in the range of a Zack Sabre Jr. You know, with the year Hechicero's having, assuming he can keep wrestling on that bicep, Hechicero might be closing in on those guys as well. His output, you know, his ceiling is not as high as all of those guys I just mentioned, but I really do feel he is just as talented as all of those guys. And I made the comment watching the Kobe show last month when Okan and Bushi came in, where I was watching Shun in that environment, and I was like, God, it's like I'm watching Nick Bockwinkel. You know, this guy is a credible heel who can make a fool of himself, and he never loses any luster. He never loses any punch, and it's because of the way they've booked him. You know, the Homare turn, again, I raved about it with you. I raved about it with Joe. It was 2.5 years of storytelling paying off, of Shun being manipulative and being a cheater and being a liar and being successful, that made this blue chip prospect go, I want to be with Shun Skywalker. That's my guy on this roster. And it is so clear when he's in the ring with Ben, and he's in the ring with Yamato, and he's in the ring with the top brass in Dragon, you know, KZ, Shibazu, whoever you want to mention, that he is on that level. But the impressive thing is that he can wrestle Stalker Ichikawa like he did at his homecoming show last year, or at Gate of Origin. He can build half the match almost around himself and punch Tamanaga. And he can eat all of this offense from Tamanaga and then still come back and look dominant. And then at the next show, he and Mochizuki Jr. can beat each other up all throughout Osaka. And it's the same level of effectiveness. He never loses anything. He only elevates the people around him. And that is such an incredibly rare thing to do. And as I, you know, look at the calendar and it's 2024 and I start to talk to some people, you know, greatest wrestler ever, you know, 10 years to 2016 coming up. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? I'm not saying, Mike, I'm not saying that Shun Skywalker is one of the 100 greatest wrestlers of all time, but I certainly know that if I were going to make that argument, it is less so about the KZ matches and the Ben K matches and the Pac match and the Ishida match. It is less so about those with Shun and more so about all of the Kobe matches we've watched and all the Osaka matches we've watched and all the Fukuoka matches. And you just go, God, this guy just doesn't miss. You know, he's good on every single show. He's good in every environment. The only time he doesn't care, rightfully so, is when he's working US Indies. And I think we've gone too far with this, like, Shun's fucking around thing, because it's not true. He works his ass off on almost every show, and he constantly gets the best out of whoever he is in the ring with. And I thought he was so impressive at Gate of Origin, wrestling Punch Tamanaga and getting me sucked into what they were doing. He is one of the best wrestlers in the world. I say it with my chest. I firmly believe it.
It is just remarkable at this point. He's almost three full years as a heel at this. And I don't, usually at a certain point with like main event heels, you're kind of going like, all right, we kind of did what all we could do with Eita, but you see how Hamare, now you instantly have like this understudy like character, and Shun is able to kind of then like the tendrils go out further and further, and you have so many possible combinations for him that when you look at what's happening on these monthly stop shows, it is not always just Hyo going and getting the all the Hyo bucks so that people can go buy merch, get the Hyo bucks, and then, you know, repeat that cycle. You have people now more and more that they're going to the show for Shun Skywalker. You're seeing the Shun towels, you're seeing the Shun signs. And it is such an incredible thing to see in a promotion where like the history of like top heels, like they have a run, but at a certain point they either turn babyface or you hope they turn babyface. But we're coming up now on, I mean, 12-1-21 is not too far away. Three full years of him as this heel character and how it's evolved. And I don't want him to ever turn face, really, at this point.
That's the amazing thing, is think about all the different people we talk to, all the various outlets, all the different reasons people watch Dragon Gate, even within the English-speaking realm. You know, all the people, you know, some are thirsty for the wrestlers, some like the great matches, some are really into the storytelling, whatever it is. I never hear anybody going, man, I can't wait for Shun Skywalker to turn face. And to be a dominant heel and to have that is utterly incredible. I mean, think about, like, the MJF discourse. And I'm on record. I not to get off on a tangent. I think MJF has been booked actually quite poorly in AEW. I think for most of his entire career there, outside of the CM Punk feud, I would have split him and Cody up 2 years after they actually did. I couldn't believe they rushed to do that. But anyways, you know, there was like this weird talking point when MJF was a good wrestler and a good character, which was many, many years ago at this point, of like, oh man, he's a heel, but people cheer him. Is he actually a good heel? Should he turn face? And I always thought it was a dumb talking point, because I was like, who gives a fuck? Just let him go out and do his thing. He's very committed to this character. But with Shun, there's not even that. Everybody's just like, no, this guy's an amazing heel. Like, I want to keep on seeing him do it. I have no desire to see babyface Shun Skywalker. I don't want him to turn. There's nobody that could usurp him. There's nobody that feels like they're taking his place. And that was always a thing in RED, you know. It was, you know, a weird two-headed dragon of Pac and Eita, and then Pac left. And you and I would have very real conversations on this podcast about, like, well, should Ishida turn on Eita and Ishida should lead the heel unit, or should Shibazu do it, or should Ben, you know, whatever the timeline was, there's always been that question of who is the top guy at this heel unit. And not only has there never been that with Shun, but also there's just no desire to see change. And to be a heel for 3 years and a popular one where there's no desire to see change is actually utterly incredible.
Yeah, it is. I've not started doing my cuts and all of that. I mean, we still have what? We still have 15 months, you know? But he's already, like, when I do my additions, he is in consideration by far.
I think he has to be. Look, December, we're gonna have a very real Shun Skywalker conversation about where he fits in the all-time Dragon Gate pecking order.
Out a whiteboard and we need to start charting this?
If I was the owner of the Mount Rushmore property, I would at least grab my chisel. I would at least start preparing for plans for an addition. I understand, you know, and look, the argument is not he's a better wrestler than Brian Adelson. The argument is not he's a better wrestler than Will Ospreay or, you know, and this year's Zack Sabre Jr. But the argument is don't laugh when his name is directly behind those guys, because I find him to be incredible. Again, I think right now he is on this Bockwinkle-esque run where he is, you know, a slightly comedic heel who then just reminds you how dangerous he can be. And you saw that in this ZBrash Gold Class match in Osaka, where, you know, you have him and Junior brawling all over the arena, and it's fantastic. And even the way Shun does that, like, this is now, you know, we're talking, you know, the absolute granular minutiae way of breaking down wrestling. And, you know, sometimes I mock, you know, like the Sagun Nakata guys for talking about wrestling like this, but go watch in the second crowd brawl when Junior and Shun go into the crowd, and watch the way Shun is bumping around the crowd, and it's like you can't take your eyes off this guy. He's just utterly fantastic at everything he does. I can't get over it. Again, it's not with him. It's not, you know, the high-end matches that I enjoy as much as the show-in, show-out sort of thing that this guy does, because I really think he is on another level. It's so, so impressive to watch.
I mean, even like from the start where he will just now just walk through the crowd at this point. Like, it is now very much like the little things, as you were saying with it. It has been like really fun to see how he just interjects himself into these kind of feuds. And it is one of the most earned things in wrestling when you start hearing, like, not to completely go back to earlier this month, but when he starts cackling when Hamari says, because his idol is Shun Skywalker, when you start having that, and then just from that one like little trait, the energy completely changes. And there's very few wrestlers today who are capable of doing that, and there's very few wrestlers, you know, throughout the history of the industry that have an ability to even out, like, for a short period of time, that the overall tenor absolutely changes. And we're seeing that right now with Shun Skywalker.
It's just very interesting that there's nothing that seems to be beneath him. And I think, you know, in the, it, like I just talked about how protective I would be over Valletta if I was booking him. And, you know, if I had a top heel like Shun Skywalker, there's not a lot of times, you know, in theory with a different wrestler that I would ever want him in the ring with a Punch Tominaga, in the ring with even like a Kagetora level guy or a Genki Horiguchi level guy at this point. And then you see him and whoever he touches, it's just, it's this beautiful thing where the crowd wants to see anybody get one over on this guy. And it so rarely happens. I think he's been pinned 3 times this year. It was Okan at the last Kobe show. It was Hyo the day before Dead or Alive in the Kyoto show that I annually don't watch. And then the Monte match in January, the Dreamgate match. Unless I'm forgetting like a multi-man thing, I think those are the only times that he's been pinned this year. And so it's just, it doesn't matter if it's Punch or if it's Rita or if it's BB Hulk, who, by the way, BB Hulk deserves some credit. He is, and this is the nicest thing I can say about him, he is actively not dragging down Gold Class. And that is utterly incredible. I love what he is doing right now. It doesn't matter who is on the roster, Shun Skywalker is bringing out the best of them.
I would say for Hulk, though, it is easier. I will say the Mad Blanky reunion match, him in that, he looked stronger than he has in a couple years. But with the Gold Class stuff, since it's like walk and brawl, I feel like it's a lot easier on him. Let's wait until like the actual tag match to see.
I watched him and Junior, you know, do some sequences together. It's like, nah, like, he, you know what? He seems he seems like he's motivated to do well right now. And I think that's all there is I think we've seen unmotivated Hulk, and rightfully so, because he hasn't been given a ton to do. But I think he can tell he's in the midst of doing something pretty hot right now.
Yeah, no, and especially like when we get to the end of the year, I think that, and it's such a wild thing, like when you consider, I know that you brought up earlier, Dead or Alive and the whole Jackie Kamei storyline going into that, this just has like a complete like different vibe, I feel like. And that adds so much. And I think when you look at how Dragon Gate schedules out the years, this is very much in a way like a Mad Blanky versus Jimmy's kind of feud in that fashion, where it just kind of always went on for so long. And it was always like heightening and heightening and heightening until actually Jimmy's put away Mad Blanky, and the only time the heel unit lost. So it's hitting the right notes for me, I feel like, as we look at feuds of the year.
I really liked a spot at Gate of Origin where Himare had Hulk in a sleeper hold, and then he ripped his shirt off and just choked him with the shirt instead. Just a small, I was like, I've never seen anybody do that. I like that. That's a good spot.
I also like his kind of skin the cat cutter.
Oh, that's awesome. That you got to watch the Osaka match if you haven't seen it. Just to Daya throws him into the ropes, and yeah, he kind of does like a kickflip cutter, like the thing that AR Fox does to the floor sometimes. I don't know I don't have the words for it. I'm kind of disappointed it wasn't Gift. I think that maybe not a lot of people watch this Osaka show. That's a fucking cool move.
Yeah, no, and it's like a thing. It's like, oh, that's a dick thing to do.
I'm into this whole thing. I really, really hope that gold class Zebrats match at Korakuen is just nuts. And I have no idea what the result is going to be. We don't know the Zebrats guys in the match right now. But the more I think about it, man, I mean, Hangman and Swerve is on its own category. Again, I think, you know, Hechicero and Zach just were so good that I have to lump those guys into consideration at the very least. But I think this is one of those times in Dragon Gate. You know, sometimes we just have years in Dragon Gate where it's like a bunch of quietly good feuds and there's nothing really to submit at the end of the year. And sometimes there's like an RED versus Masquerade where it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, we liked all of those matches. I guess we'll do that. But I think we're in the midst of a proper feud of the year contender that could be condensed into Minoru versus Rita if it had to be, but Zebrats versus Gold Class as a whole is just really enthralling right now.
Absolutely. Should we take a look around the greater Dragon system to close out the show this week?
Let's preview this Kobe card first. I've got it pulled up. If you do not, do you want me to go through this card real quick?
Yep, go right ahead.
All right, I'll read this from opening match to main event, and then you can respond to it in kind. Opening matches, Hyo, Jackie Kamei, and La Estrella versus Kai, Ishin, and Himare. Match number two, Ho-Ho Loon and Reach Tamanaga versus Takashi Yoshida and Problem Dragon in the match that will most tempt you to skip. Singles match, in match number three, the Akihiro Sahara debut match. It is the aforementioned Sahara versus Big Boss Shimizu. Match number four, Yamato and Ryo Fuda versus Gurken Mask and Yosuke Santa Maria in the K-Slow offer match. That looks like a ton of fun. Match number five, the Royal Torimon Sambo Hall Battle Royal. Ultimo, Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Dragon Kid, Genki Horiguchi, Yasushi Kondo, Konamama Ichikawa, Susumu Yokosuka, Naruki Doi, Sachioka Boy, and Kagatora. Match number six is Strong Machine J, KZ, and UT versus Daya, Kakuta, and Tanaka. That is the match that I want at Gate of Destiny. They are doing it here. And then your main event, match number seven, Ben K, BB Hulk, Rita, and Mochizuki Jr. versus Shun Skywalker, Coach Minora, Jason Lee, and Gianni Valletta.
I think that you look at that semi-main event, and it's like, all right, Tanaka, get your pen on UT, make the challenge.
Yep. I get the feeling they're either going to announce there the Yoshioka return, mm-hmm. After a D-Courage win, or Tanaka's going to get a win, and they're going to say, let's run it back at Osaka.
Yeah, no, and then it's like, all right, KZ, you're not a champion. Get out of this match. We want the belts on the line. The 8-man tag, I feel like that's the kind of perfect preview, and I think that also kind of tells us that Johnny probably will not be in the Zebrats group for Korakuen, I'd feel like, maybe.
Yeah, probably. It almost feels weird to separate him from Rita right now, but they could have him go out there. And I mean, oh, you know what they might do? You know what they might do? At Korakuen, they might do Valletta versus Sahara.
I don't want them to do that for like another year and a half.
I know. But I...
Well, when Zahara's a proper beefy boy, he can have a beefy boy fight with him.
God, he's huge already. I can't wait for that. This is a fun show. I mean, look, you know, the match two is as weak of a match as you can put together. But you got Fuda and Gurken Mask in the same match. You got this Toriumon Battle Royal, which feels like it could lead to something. It could either be an Ichikawa match or it could lead to something. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, and leading to something can be a wide breadth of things.
this is true.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that suddenly then Yuzushi Kanda says, yeah, I'm done after this match.
It could lead to a Toriumon Mexico announcement.
Yeah, it could do literally anything. And hey, my crazy idea I thought of, Paradox Assistant, I mean, Team of Yamato. It's on the table. Yeah, no, this Sambo Hall show rocks. Monte still being out stinks. Leal Estrella staying in the country through the Fukumen tournament kind of plays off for it. But yeah, and you get Hamare versus Jackie Kamei.
Yeah, should be awesome. I'm very into this. So we'll talk about that next week. I don't know. I'm kind of buzzing on the Gold Class Zebrat stuff. The more I talk about it, I think it's that could be a Korkin main event. I mean, it might end up being the Korkin main event, but those are your Zebrat's heavy hitters.
Yeah.
And they're against Gold Class. That is really, really fun. I hope they tear Kobe Sambo Hall apart.
Yeah, no, like this could be something that turns into a complete no contest, or it could be like a 20-minute time limit draw. And
was the other thing. I'm glad you said no contest. That reminded me. Part of the escalation of this feud that I love is like Rita hits the code red on Minoru and Osaka, and that's when Zebrats interfere. And it makes sense. You know, Rita got a half-second victory on the guy he's been trying to kill, and then Zebrats got their heat back immediately. And it was just like, oh man, wrestling's not that hard. You know, this is what I like to see. This is good stuff. I'm now racking my brain over like, okay, what stipulation match should they have? Because I'm of the belief, and I know this is not very popular, but like sometimes when you break up a tag team, they just shouldn't have a singles match. They should, you know, they should just go their separate ways. Rita and Minoru, they need to have a blow-off singles match. And I want them to kill each other. I don't want it to look like a Dragon Gate match. I want
no
them
ropes.
To... Oh, okay. Duh. I think I overthought
no
this
ropes.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
So wait, hold on. So Minoru, was Yamato and Minoru a no ropes match and a hair match?
They did both, I think. Yeah.
Huh. Let me. Oh. God, that feels like it was. Yeah, hair versus hair. Yamato versus Minoru.
There was a no ropes match before that, I thought.
Was there? Hold on. Let me see if cage match has no ropes anywhere. Because now I feel like he did it. Let me see what Jay has. Hold on. Coach Minoru, no rope. Oh, this is going to drive me nuts. I don't remember if the June match was no ropes now. Was it just hair versus hair? Rainbow Gate. That was Rainbow Gate. I'm sure I reviewed the show. Let me.
Because the hair match was the July Korkin after, or the July Korkin going into Kobe World.
God, I can't remember. And I hate that I don't know this off the top of my head. Okay, all right. No, I reviewed the Ben match. Damn it, you reviewed that. You reviewed the show that they had the hair versus hair match on. What are we doing here? Hold on. All right, I'm in the archives. I'm very close. We're going to figure this out on air. I know everybody's yelling at their phones, but you did Yamato and Minoru, and this was... there's the Brave Gate match and hair versus hair that had ropes. Okay.
Yeah.
Had ropes, but now I don't remember if Minoru ever did a no rope match.
I thought Minoru has done a no ropes match before. Cause I'm trying. Cage match needs to have a no ropes filter. They really should.
God, that's going to drive me nuts. I don't know how to figure that out. Somebody in the Discord, let us know.
Yeah, just don't tweet me.
Discord.
Yeah, but that was what's happening in the home promotion. Let's go around the greater Dragon System case. We have two big kind of notes. Taiji Ishimori Produce was announced today. It's called Superhuman Taiji Ishimori Gets Ridiculous, a show where he's going to wrestle 5 times. A lot of the cards going to be Mystery Vortex, but what has been announced is Taiji Ishimori is going to team with Shun Skywalker along with Sho versus Jeff Cobb, Daisuke Sekimoto, and Shuji Ishikawa. It's a 15-minute match, but we're having 5 different Taiji Ishimori matches and a rare instance of Taiji Ishimori with the home promotion.
This, feels like it's an alternate window into what if Toriumon X was good.
Yeah, it has like a trappings that he's trying to just insane things during the show. Like it's like Japanese, like kind of like I watch a show called Documental, which was all about trying to make people laugh, and it was kind of the promo for it was this was kind of the style that Ishimori did for the launch here, and it kind of has like that kind of vibe to it.
I'm into it. I didn't know he was wrestling. Is he wrestling in every match on that show?
I don't know what the rest of the show is, but they said he's wrestling 5 times over the course of a show.
That's cool. I did not know that. I don't know if I would pick Taiji Ishimori's body to do that with, but that's a cool idea.
Yeah, yeah, and I like the logo at the least. You know,
that's cool. I'm into the match. I mean, Cobb and Skywalker and Sakamoto and Skywalker. I mean, I twist my arm. I'm into it.
Yeah, and I love that they always do the smirking Shun. Render for the photo. That's not the only thing happening around the Greater Dragon System case. We have started the fall of Glate. It started this Sunday. I've been watching the show in my back window as we've been recording case. They have 5 shows over a period of 2 weeks. We've talked a lot about the Verve Mega show happening in Osaka, and then also the Corkin Hall show being announced coming up on the 9th as well. But the last one, I think, major match was announced for Glate Version Mega from Ideon Arena Osaka on October 6th. It's T-Hawk versus Takahiro Yamamura.
And which show is this on? I got confused.
This is the big one. The big one.
Okay. All right. Huh. Well, I don't know what they're doing. It's so tough. It reminds me a little bit of Valletta when he first came in, where I look at what they're doing with Yamamura and I go, yes, they are doing everything right. I am just not sure anybody's going to care.
Yeah. And they had on their first show, the stretch, the new Glate Young Blood versus El Tres, the original three members of Stronghearts, T-Hawk, Lindemann, and Shima. The finish was T-Hawk winning with a Cobra twist on Yamamura, setting up this. And they're at this point where this is kind of the last kind of card in the Shima deck to play, I feel like.
It's all they got. You know, Watanabe is not a star. He might be talented, he's not a star. Tetsuya Izuki, not a star. Hayato Tomura looks like he might be a star. Definitely not a star now.
Yeah, Jun Tancho. Whatever prospects he had has been completely ruined.
Jun Tancho, I fully believe in my heart of hearts I could make him the perfect mid-card wrestler. He has never looked like a star.
Yeah, and I right now, just give you a sense of where this show was on the 22nd, had to have they felt like they needed to have a Damnation plus Glate, anti-Glate Monsters match versus Bulk Orchestra. They felt like that was needed to happen.
Yeah, this is the September 22nd card. And let me tell you, when I watch this, I am going straight to the main event. There is nothing, not a second of matches one through six that I want to see.
And as you've noticed, I've not mentioned that I've had this show on in the background the entire time as I'm through match 5.
Good Lord, does that dire card look awful? And if you look at, so they're running Shinjuku Face. They'll have run that show by the time everybody hears this. Match number 4, Soma Watanabe and Takahiro Yamamura versus Shima and Gamma. Okay, again, they're doing what they should be doing. I get it. It's not going to be very good, but I get it. Main event, Kaito Ishida, Tetsuya Izuki, and Hartley Jackson versus Ryuichi, Fire Kawakami, Brass Knuckles Jun, and Chris Weiss. I could not turn off my TV faster than when it gets to that main event. Good Lord.
It's just, I mean, T-Hawk and Lindemann versus Chris Ridgeway and Seki Yoshioka. Yeah, I mean,
I guess. I don't know. I'm not super into Ridgeway.
I'm not into Yoshioka at all. I think he has been, like, whenever I see him around with Strong Hearts, I'm like, oh, well, could you not get a booking for Irie during that day?
Where is Irie at?
I think he's working like Kyushu Pro and like Micro Indies.
God, let me throw up his cage match real quick. What? I don't know the last time I watched him wrestle. Osaka Pro which is cool. I kind of want to check that out. He is one third of the War World Six Man Tag Champions in Tenryu Project.
Good for him.
I don't hate it. This man, you know what? Koji Iwamoto, Kukai Iwasaki, and Shigehiro Irie versus Kengo, Minoru Suzuki, and Brother Yashi. If I have time, I'll check that out. That doesn't sound horrible. He worked the Great House Show that wasn't televised. I don't know, as I look through this, if I have watched an Irie match this year.
He doesn't work places that make tape, or they're just like hand cams of wherever. He works a lot of American Pro, you know, so I mean, it's a lot of whatever. If Yashi's not has his cell phone out, that stuff's not getting recorded.
You know what? I've watched one Irie match this year, and it was that first Osaka Pro show that everybody watched because it was in early January. It was the one with Matsu Fasu versus Billy Ken Kidd.
All right. Yeah. No, I remember that one.
He wrestled on that show. That's the only, I'm looking at his cage match. I mean, he did WXW and Ref Pro, and I haven't seen any of that stuff. All the Glade stuff was either not televised or just looked awful because it was like him and Junji in that OWE world title match. That's crazy. I forgot he existed.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of feel like that's where he is. And since we don't really watch DDT, even though he's kind of a little bit back in the good graces of them over there, it's not like he's working every DDT show either.
No. I would like to know what happened with Ridgeway and Noah. I don't know if anybody knows that. If they do, shoot me a DM, but I'm not. I don't know. Maybe he'll impress me. I'll watch that T-Hawk and Lindemann match just to see if he can get over with me there, because if he can't do it in that match, it's never going to happen.
Well, if that match is not going to get over for you, I have another match on this Nagoya show that's coming up on the 29th. Ledette UWF double bout, Kazuhiko Nakajima and Takanori Ito versus Masakatsu Funaki and the aforementioned Daichi Hashimoto. That's the main event of that show.
It's never good when Daichi Hashimoto is wrestling for your promotion. That is never good.
Yeah, but
God, you told me we were going to talk about this. I really hadn't looked at these cards too carefully because Glade doesn't really run a lot, and they're running a lot in the lead up to Osaka. These shows look awful.
It is just a real wild thing. You know how much they're charging for front row for Osaka Edeon Arena?
How much?
50,000 yen.
And I mean, do we know like what Gate of Destiny's front row is?
Probably a half, if that.
God, I mean,
they were the first company to charge 100 or 15,000 yen for front row in Corcoran Hall. Dragon Gate charges and has like charge forever. It's in the 8,000 yen.
Then Nagoya show. This is on the 29th. Hayato Tomura and Quiet Storm versus Soma Watanabe and Junji. I will not be watching that match. Yamamura versus Chris Ridgeway. Again, I'll give it a shot. Maybe he's better in Glade. T-Hawk Lindemann and Seki Yoshioka versus Shida Izuchi and Kotaro Suzuki. I don't know. I'll watch it. It'll be 3.5 stars. It'll remind me about how good Lindemann is, and then I'll move on. And Daichi Hashimoto, main eventer. fucking shit. This is awful.
I mean, is that awful, or is Minoru Tanaka, Takanori Ito, Seiji Ikemoto, and Tsunakaka versus Kota Ibushi, Riki Itachi, Yukimitsu Takahashi, and Kikitaru more awful?
Well, Yukimitsu Takahashi could be really good. That's like no one knows what's going on in Ibushi's head. Nobody knows what's going on in his school, but that's his kid, and he worked the Sumo Hall show this year and impressed me. So I'm actually glad he's making tape again. I don't know if he'll ever be able to escape the Ibushi Research Institute, but that kid could be good. So I'm fine with that.
How about Glade MMA, Team Glade versus Tokyo Sabres, grappling rules, Team Glade, Daisuke Nakamura, Hideki Shrek Sakane, and Yu Izuka versus the Tokyo Sabres of Masaki Takakura, Kantaman, and Kaol Uno. Each of them have a 5-minute, 1-round match.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. You know, it's what we've all, there are people buying tickets to see Ricochet and El Hijo del Vikingo on the show.
If they're going to
have to sit through that.
If he is wrestling, man, the one thing you might have missed, he's missed all of his dates that they have announced in the lead up.
Oh, is that? I did not know that.
Yeah. The doctors aren't clearing him. or have not cleared him to this point. And now it's basically 10 days out from the show, and who knows if he's going to make it.
Oh, man. I shouldn't laugh. I don't wish that on anybody. I would like to see Shima and Ricochet versus Soma and Vikingo. So I hope that happens.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one match on the show. I mean, Ishida and Izuchi versus Rascals will be interesting. Like that will be kind of...
I don't know. Will it? it might be.
I mean, Izuchi versus Trey Miguel is very funny to me. It's for my amusement. I didn't say it was going to be good. I said it's going to be interesting.
It's a little bit like Ishida and Parker Boudreaux on that Corkin show, which will be the 2-year anniversary of Ishida jumping to Glate. And I'm sure that's not what he envisioned 2 years ago.
Yeah, gosh. Michiko versus Fabi Apache has, like, that's going to be something.
Look,
has Michiko ever had a good match?
No, he has not. They have not. They're building to Yamamura winning the belt against Tamura in December, and it makes both of us uncomfortable, you even more so than me. It's the thing they've got, and I don't blame them for doing it. I pray to God everybody stays safe. They at least, I can see what they're doing. They have a direction. I can't wait to see all the steps in terms of how they get there.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're not doing Nakajima versus Yamamura. Like, that's the one thing that I'd be like, all right, that's what I'm getting on my soapbox.
You're right. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, that would suck.
But that is taking the look around the greater Dragon system to close
that really out. Took my breath away. I was in tune with the Yamamura stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe how bad these undercards are. I used to be able to watch Glate shows, and even if they weren't great, it'd be like, all right, it's 6 matches. They all look fine, whatever. There is stuff on these shows I cannot watch.
I mean, there's nothing that I could up to, like this tag match, Ishida and Suzuki versus Ito and Ridgeway. Nothing like even partially pulled my attention from anything. It's just,
yeah, all the Kawakami stuff sucks.
I you know what's super weird about the one thing I noticed on the showcase? Mm-hmm. I know we're circling the drain with Glate here, but they come in from outside of this like room that they run in Osaka, and you know who's like right like one door down's glaring at them, trying his damnedest to make them look like invaders.
Who?
It's Kaz Hayashi in a Glate t-shirt.
Well, what purpose does that serve?
I mean, he's technically the CTO. He still works for Glate or Ledette, so he's mad that they're there, like trying to make it seem like that he's actually, the Kawakami's actually fired. And oh, yeah, they did say that what the company really needs is to have Onita back around, and he's going to come back around.
Oh, good. Well, that's definitely not the sign of desperation.
Yep. But that is Glate, and that does it for this episode of Open the Voice Gate. Case, did you have anything else you want to touch on before we got out of here?
No. We'll talk Kobe next week. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, that Kobe show. This might be, ever since Gate of Mayane, I've had such good vibes about the house shows, I feel like. Mm-hmm. They've had a really fun stretch, like with how the schedule changed with Dangerous Gate moving out of Tokyo, going to Yokohama. I feel like everything since... Really, I mean, as you brought up, like that July Cork or that early August Corkin really has put the company into full gear going into the last quarter of the year. Mm-hmm. It's really fun stuff.
Very much so.
Well, that's going to do it for this week. You could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. You can come chat with us in the Voices of Wrestling Discord. We have our own Open the Voice Gate channel as well as the overall Dragon Gate channel. We're always talking about current events, past stuff. It's easily one of the best places on the internet to talk about Dragon Gate. And you can follow us individually. I'm at Fujiheya. Case is at _ in your case. That's going to do it for Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking about Kobe Sambo Hall and the debut of Akahiro Sahara. Take care, everyone.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.